Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday at 4:20 p.m. online at americascannabisconversation.com. Each week, we provide our listeners information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and adult-use cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry experts, elected officials, local growers, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear the latest industry news and updates from the American Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis, personal success stories, and more. It's time to join the conversation. And here's your host, Dan Perkins.
I'm Dan Perkins, and this is your American Cannabis Conversation Quick News. Napa Valley, California. Wine versus weed in Napa Valley. Napa Valley is famous for its Cabernet Sauvignon, but the cannabis industry is moving fast. In some regions, the storied vintners are sounding the alarm that California's newest legal crop could damage the flavor and brand of their prized wines. The grape growers worry that pot won't pair well and could damage the territory that they have spent a century and a half cultivating. You have to protect the Napa name, said Ryan Kolbus, CEO of the Napa County Farm Bureau, which has taken a strong position against cannabis cultivation. Napa is an internationally recognized brand, and you don't want anything to disrupt that brand. Napa County has explicitly banned commercial cannabis growing in the unincorporated rural areas where most vineyards lie. Local farmers and winemakers are keen on protecting Napa, but they have a philosophically opposing view on how weed could affect the region's reputation, which could be tested this year if residents get a chance to vote on allowing cannabis cultivation. Denver, Colorado. Cannabis store burglaries on the rise in Denver. The number of break-ins at Denver's marijuana stores hit a three-year high in 2019. Five robberies and 122 burglaries were reported to the Denver Police Department last year. In 2018, marijuana businesses reported one robbery and 120 burglaries, according to the Denver Post. Last September, Denver police warned of an increase in burglaries of marijuana operations and urged owners to beef up their security measures. Denver Police Commander James Henning said that cannabis sells for $3,000 to $3,500 a pound on the East Coast and only about $1,200 a pound in Colorado. Washington, D.C. The coronavirus in China could disrupt the cannabis vape hardware supply chain. The coronavirus outbreak in China, which has killed thousands of people and sickened tens of thousands of people, has led to travel restrictions. It's expected to impact marijuana vape companies that depend on the Chinese suppliers, interfering with the flow of hardware and other products. Trade tensions between the United States and China previously caused disruption in the supply chain. This newest issue underscores the vulnerabilities in the global marketplace that vape and other marijuana companies rely on for products ranging from LED lighting to packaging supplies. This has been your America's Cannabis Conversation Quick News. I'm Dan Perkins. So let's see who's joining the conversation today. We have Chaos, an individual who has a reputation as a leader in the cannabis industry, who will be interviewed by our outside reporter, Rich Walcuff. Devin Langford will be helping us understand why we need to grow our own cannabis and about the special offer that his company has for W420 radio listeners. Karen Muller is a broker who buys and sells cannabis businesses, and she's going to talk to us today about what businesses might be the best to buy. And finally, we have Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, who's going to talk about pressure on the Senate Banking Committee chairman to take up the safe banking bill that was passed in the House last year. Let's join the conversation.
Okay, it is time on the W420 Radio Network to get to know Miss Chaos from the pharmaceutical company. Now, that sounds very esoteric, but you are doing something that is not being done anyplace else?
That's so true. We are bringing the farm back into healing using cannabis and our full flower infusions.
Okay, people hear about infusions, they may shrug their shoulders, the uninitiated. What is an infusion?
Yeah, an infusion for our process is where we take outdoor organically grown flower and we combine it with heat, time, pressure, and love with olive oil. And olive oil actually pulls out the broadest spectrum of healing cannabinoids and terpenes and flavonoids, all of the things that the cannabis plant has to offer you to elevate your life, to help your body heal. Yeah, that's what our infusions do.
Okay, and how does it differ from a tincture?
Well, our infusions are a tincture, but most of what's out there in tincture form is using chemicals to create an isolate or a distillate. I like to liken it to, like, you know, when you go to a Friday night game, do you want to just see the star player on the field, or do you want to have the whole team? Most of the tinctures that are out there are using the isolate and distillate, just the single molecules of CBD or THC, and that's the star player. It's great, you're going to have an effect, but when you bench the rest of the team, you're missing out on the full potential of the healing or experience that the cannabis plant has for you.
Are we talking about the entourage?
The entourage effect, absolutely, yeah.
Some legacy growers up in Humboldt use that reference point.
Yeah.
Tara Carver, I think it was. You know Tara?
I do, yeah. We're also a legacy brand. We've been in this industry long before legalization, and we were one of the first 7% of all legalized businesses once California went legal.
Okay, so you have this tincture, this infusion, and you use a dropper. How is it disseminated? How is it used?
Yeah, so the intention to use them, because they're olive oil drops, is to use them under your tongue so that you get immediate...
Sublingually,
if you will. And that way you're getting immediate access to your endocannabinoid system, which processes the THC and the CBD and other cannabinoids. But because we're doing an olive oil infusion, you can also cook with it. You can use it topically on your skin. I like to rub the tincture oil on my head when I have a migraine. There's many ways that you can use the products.
How heavily THC infused is it?
Yeah, we have a full range of tinctures. So we originally started with just a CBD at an 11-to-1 ratio for our moms as an alternative to the pharmaceutical drugs that they had been prescribed that were actually making things worse for them. So we have an 11-to-1 CBD. We have a 1-to-1 paired with a sour tangy and CBD. We've got a pure sour tangy, and we also have our doze drops. And the doze drops are a 1-to-2, one part CBD to two part indica flower. To help you get a good night's sleep and wake up feeling refreshed.
Mm-hmm. So botany, chemistry, art, and science all come together. And your skill set and how you came to this understanding?
Yeah, well, I have a herbalism background of my own exploration. I actually have a master's in social work. I've always had a heart for helping people heal and helping people just empower them to take healing back into their own hands. My business partner also has a background in psychology and herbalism. And when we met, both of our moms were going through this real struggle, and we were working on a CBD farm, and we knew that there could be a more natural way for them to heal. And so we set out together to create the most natural, most gentle, and most effective products that we could to help our moms. It helped our moms so well that we started getting calls from friends of friends of friends of our moms asking for the products. And when we had an opportunity to enter into the legal market, we took it.
How long ago was that?
That was 2015. We started the business about 8 months before that, although we've been in the industry well prior.
Okay, now, legalization in California was implemented in 2018 recreationally, but you were under the auspices of the old medical marijuana paradigm?
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
So that opened the door for you there. Yeah. And how is the legalization Prop 64 impacted you in the last 2 years?
Oh man, you know, I tell people every morning I wake up, I feel like I get into the roller coaster cart and put the seat belt on and throw my hands up. It's like everything's constantly changing all the time. You know, it's important to be able to pivot. I use a lot of CBD. And, you know, for us in this business, it's really like people over profits. Like, we're here to help people heal. And while the regulations may make it really difficult, the cost of compliance makes it really difficult. At the heart of it, when we get emails from folks every day telling us about how what we're making impacts and changes their lives and elevates them and allows them to have a better quality of life. Like, that's what makes it worth it.
Well, that's awesome. Let's do a deeper dive into the cannabinoids in the infusion and the endocannabinoid system within the human being.
Yeah, so all mammals actually have an endocannabinoid system, and we produce naturally CBD, THC, CBD every day.
Back to the point of the cannabinoids in the infusion and the endocannabinoid system in every human being,
and how the interaction, you know, impacts health or the lack thereof.
Yeah, so every mammal has an endocannabinoid system, and the whole goal of that system, it's linked to every other system in our body. It's linked to our lymph system, it's linked to our brains, it's linked to our lungs and our liver. So the role of the endocannabinoid system is to help bring everything to homeostasis. So when we're dealing with toxins that are environmental or stress-related or food-related, our natural ability to help ourselves heal comes from our endocannabinoid system. And sometimes it doesn't do what we want it to because we are dealing with stress or the environmental toxins. And so using cannabis to help give your body what it naturally needs and wants to help it heal is a great way to have a better quality of life. And the tinctures that we do with the process that we're using, we're capturing all of the natural cannabinoids that are occurring in the strains. And so you're getting, you know, our labels say you're getting CBD, you're getting THC, but you're also getting THCA, you're also getting CBN, you're also getting CBG, you're getting a piece of all of the cannabinoids that are naturally occurring in that plant.
Okay, I need a definition of those, please.
Yeah, well, so you're familiar with CBD. CBDA is the unactivated version of it. THCA is the unactivated version of THC. So it doesn't get you high, but it does have medicinal properties. And each of the cannabinoids have a different properties. It's all like, you know, they're all a team. They're holding hands together, and they're all like, you know, like CBD unlocks different receptors for the THC to access to help boost pain relief. You know, they all work together.
Now, you're a pioneer because this has never been discovered before, correct? I mean, are you learning as you go with your scientist partners?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say in the West, I am a pioneer. There's so much research, and there's so much research that's been coming out of Israel for decades. So, you know, we're a little far behind, and I think that has a little bit to do with the war on drugs and Reefer Madness era here. In the West, yeah, I'm a little bit of a pioneer, and of course, I've discovered along the way. And I do have, you know, my business partner and I dive into research. We're always trying to discover more, and we have a lot of great relationships with other people in the industry who are also forerunners, and you know, we work together. It's a really beautiful community, the cannabis community. I think, you know, I'm excited to be a part of this industry more than any other industry because of the heart and the root of it being in community. Right. You know, like, it's like back in the day, you'd all sit around in a circle and pass a joint around, you know? And I think that, like, the roots of that heart connection and that mind connection are really powerful. And I'm so proud to be able to continue to do that.
Can you market this beyond California? Can you sell it out of the state, given the restrictions?
No. You know, it's not federally legal yet. And so what is allowed in cannabis has to be made and sold only within the state of California. So to have our products outside of the state of California, we essentially have to set up a new manufacturing license and a new business in each of those states until it becomes legal.
And is there anything rivaling what you do internationally, or a parallel path of development on these infusions?
Yeah, I mean, I think people have seen CBD out there, a hemp-based form of CBD, and that is something that you can get globally and nationally. We're actually planning to make a quarter three launch of our hemp line, a full flower infusion of hemp, which again is different than the isolate products that you're seeing out there. Yeah, and we're working hard to expand our reach. We are looking actively for partnerships in different states. We've been talking with some folks up in Canada, because of course, Canada Canada has a global distribution. We're working really hard. We get emails all the time. People reach out all the time wanting to access our products. And it's a real shame that we're limited to the state of California. However, like, this is the beginning of a brand new industry, and we have a lot of opportunity to create some change.
Now, with the hemp legalization nationally in America, does that favor your prospects?
Sure. You know, our CBD, there's different types of hemp. There's industrial hemp, there's cannabis sativa hemp, and, you know, they have different properties. When you're making products out of industrial hemp, you're definitely using chemicals to isolate the single CBD molecule. And oftentimes, like, it's a byproduct in other types of processing. But you can get cannabis hemp that has full spectrum, other cannabinoids, you know, in the same way that you could. It's just like a different ratio. And that's, you know, we use cannabis, CBD, but there are very similar strains, just depending on the ratios. It depends on what you call it. So it does put some limits on it. It does, you know, this industry, there's, because it's like a new era and they're developing new rules, there is oftentimes a lot of gray area.
Okay, well for some folks who want to get involved, mm-hmm. or they're entrepreneurial in the cannabis world, what tips would you offer? What challenges do you face?
Yeah.
Because there's some, as you say, the laws keep changing, the interpretation keeps changing. Mm-hmm. They're consolidating the three bureaus that oversee cannabis in California,
yeah.
to have one auspices. But right now, every time you turn around, you know, they keep changing the rules of the game.
It's really true. You know, I see this as a long game. Like, this is a brand new industry that was slated to be bigger than, you know, cannabis industry is supposed to be bigger than pharmaceuticals, alcohol, tobacco, all combined. So the potential is really there. We're just at the beginning stages, and we're having regulators come into an industry that was already successfully running across the country globally, and putting these rules on them without understanding, like, without understanding anything about the plant or the process or the impact. If you're thinking about getting in the cannabis industry, do it. Whatever you want to do in this world, there's a way to link it to cannabis. If it's like a clothing line made out of hemp, or, I mean, literally anything you can think of, there's a way to link it to cannabis. And it's an opportunity that is unseen. I would say, like, definitely have a support system. I've picked up running as a stress reliever, and just be prepared to, you know, you've got to be agile. You have to be prepared to shift your way of thinking and pivot and adjust to what's coming down the pipeline, and stay true to your mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, my mission is to spread healing, and I fall back on that when I wake up and I'm like, is this worth it? What am I doing? Like,
mm-hmm.
this, like, what? I can't even, what? You know, and
you're
those
the salmon swimming upstream,
oh,
aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we all are. And I was just having this conversation with some of my colleagues tonight who have other brands, and like the things that we're facing on a daily basis, it's crazy. And it's nice to know that I'm not alone. Like, this
okay.
is the industry, and, you know, the only way to quit is to quit.
Right. So the profitability, banking challenges, investment.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
This is a long game, again. Like, you know, we're seeing some big giants who came in with large amounts of investment starting to fall. Like, it's the industry is early. For us, it's been about staying true to our mission, having steady growth. We've been profitable every year. Accessing funding has been really hard. I think partly because we're a women-owned business, and partly because, you know, what we're doing really is, like, putting people over profits. And, like, you know, there's...
It's compassionate capitalism.
Absolutely. I mean, I definitely want to make a profit. I want to be able to use the profits that we use to empower my communities and to give it back. But not on the backs of, like, people who are trying to heal. And I don't think it has to look that way, you know?
And how about the banking challenges? Because where do you park your money? What do you do with it when you get it? Because there are all these restrictions. You have to jump through more hoops.
It's so true. And, you know, everybody in the industry is facing banking challenges, which makes it really difficult to even collect payments that we're supposed to be getting. You know, I'm trying to find a new place to live now, and I don't have a credit history to show because I don't have the ability to have a bank account in my business. You know, like, it's definitely a challenge. I'm ready for there to be some supportive institutionalization of processes that can empower this industry. Like, we're really being held back by the lack of that support.
Well, the first banking initiative passed the House of Representatives, and now it's in the Senate. And maybe Mitch McConnell, who's been a hemp advocate, will somehow make a great leap of faith here, embrace the cannabis industry.
Yeah, you know, like, it's great to leave it up to our representatives. I think we're also really, this cannabis industry is missing a real opportunity to engage and create community around these issues. I think there's a lack of awareness. Like, in California, everyone's like, great, cannabis is legal, that's awesome. But they don't really understand that they can have a voice in what the tax structure looks like. They can have a voice in where those funds go. They can have a voice in helping to create the systems that will build this industry and keep it in a true healing path. And so I really encourage people to start educating themselves and start supporting local businesses and asking questions like, where is this coming from? Like, who is funding this? You know, Philip Morris already has their hands in some big names in this industry, and, you know, like, we have an opportunity to do something different, and this plant is for the people, so let's get the people.
You're like the suffragette of the 21st century chaos. People want to contact you and learn more about pharmaceutical. How do we do that?
Yeah, you can find my website online. You can email me. It's thepharmaceuticalscompany@gmail.com, and that's spelled F-A-R-M because we're putting the farm back in healing.
And that's beautiful. Well said. You're doing an awesome job.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
What you do. It's
pleasure
important.
Meeting you. Awesome.
Yeah. Maybe someday we'll sit around the campfire and have a little soak together, huh?
I hope so.
Right
I'll
on.
Take it as an offer.
Right on.
And you're hearing us on the W420 Radio Network.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
Welcome back to the conversation. We have a really special guest, Devin Langford from Hawthorne Gardening Company. We've talked to him before, but we wanted him to come back because I needed to find somebody who could talk intelligently and in a way in which most people could understand about what the reason is somebody should consider growing their own. Many, many states who have decriminalized marijuana have put in specific provisions that you can grow your own and use it and give it away if you want. So, Devin, why should people seriously consider growing their own?
Well, I mean, and not just growing their own, but, you know, paying attention to the products that they buy when they are growing their own. So, you know, the indoor cannabis space has become one of the most growing side spots of the indoor horticultural industry. And the reasons are is because of these six plant laws that pop up in states and, you know, make it easier for you to be able to access your medicine and products. So at the end of the day, a simple home grow is not too hard to set up. You know, maintaining it is harder than the actual setup.
To have the ability and the freedom to grow your own up to six plants. So I got to ask you, how tough is it?
They don't call it weed for no reason. It really does grow like a weed. The cannabis plant is a very hardy plant. It's not hard to ruin a plant. You guys all know, you know, the proper maintenance that goes into taking care of a plant. But cannabis thrives in all environments, all over geographical locations, indoor, outdoor. It's a very trainable plant, you know, in the sense that, you know, if you keep your uptake on your temperatures, your, you know, air, environmental control, lighting, nutrients, next to genetics, those are your most important things, is environmental control, nutrients, and genetics. If you can keep your plants healthy without getting bugs, then, you know, now you know you're consuming clean medicine and you don't have to worry about purchasing that overtaxed, sometimes questionable products.
When you think about it, and I'm not trying to complain or chastise the commercial industry that grows under strict supervision, but is there a difference between you growing, and I'm not trying to be facetious, Devin, is there a difference between growing your own at home and what you can walk into a store and buy the same strain, if you would, a plant at your local dispensary?
No, we say there's 1,000 different ways to skin a cat, and there's, you know, thousands of different ways to grow a plant. So each person's going to have their own unique traits and characteristics that they're going to find more desirable in their strains or cultivars. And if you like that strain that you found at a dispensary and you're able to find that seed or get a clone of that, then yes, you can expect the same characteristics and the same great product that you would experience at a dispensary in your home grow. But again, it's going to come back to those three key factors: environmental control, lighting, and genetics and nutrients.
So is it labor intensive to do this, Devin?
You're going to be looking at this. The more successful gardeners spend more time in their room. If you want, you know, if you're going to be one of those gardeners who only wants to spend 10 minutes in there when you're watering your plant, the kind of results you're going to get. If you're a person who likes to sit in there, talk to the plants, play your plants some music, maybe let them listen to some 420 radio networks and get their leaves popping, then you're going to be a little bit more successful by spending more time with your plants, picking off leaves, defoliating, treating for pests and pathogens. Those are the more successful gardeners are the gardeners that spend time with their plants.
So we're speaking with Devin Langford from Hawthorne Gardening Company. It's not a daunting task to grow. And I know that I've talked to people, Devin, who are commercial growers who do grow houses and at the same time, well, I guess they call it wild or natural, out into the in the forest and everything else. And they tell me there's no difference in the quality of the product between grow houses and growing in the wild. What you do have, though, is a problem of a lot more pests and issues growing outside than you do growing inside. But you talk about your growing system not even using dirt, right?
You know, just recirculating water is one way to go, or just ground up coconut husk is a very, very popular method. A combination of pith and fiber from coconut, one of the most popular growing mediums. Very anti-mold and pathogen resistant.
So how does a customer, how does somebody who decides to, and we'll talk about when you're on your next appearance about buying one of your grow tents, how do you know what you should grow?
I think it comes down to personal preference. It's the same thing, you know, I come from the world of culinary and hospitality management, and, you know, experiences create nostalgia, smells, flavors, the person you were with. It's the same thing with cannabis or the same thing with a good cocktail. You revert to that for your comfort zone. You revert to that because you like something you experienced about it. You know, maybe the first time you tried the OG Kush, you realized that feeling that you got from that cannabis strain was better than any feeling you got from any other cannabis strain. And if that was what you liked, then I would say, you know, go with one of those heavy OG strains and learn to grow that to your best method. But, you know, I boxed myself in growing up. I was so stuck growing one type of plant, and I missed a lot of the awesome benefits of experiencing more than just one cultivar of cannabis. So I would, you know, definitely recommend try different things. And it's, you know, it's the same thing with food. It's the same thing with cocktails. It's the same thing with life. You know, experience more to learn more. It'll help you diversify your growing style. It'll help you learn about more techniques. Every one of these plants do grow differently, and they each have their own unique characteristic. You'll find something that works for you, and if not, keep experimenting till you do. If that strain that you grew was too lanky and too bushy and too popcorn nuggy, then find something that's a little bit more stout and a little bit more dense, and that might be your key to success. If you're cooking, you know, maybe go with something that's a little bit more on the CBD heavy side. So, you know, you can get a 2-to-1 strain too, where you get more CBD than cannabis. So, I mean, than THC. So something to think about. There's something for everyone.
Is six plants a lot of plants?
I mean, it depends on your grow space. You can make six plants take up your entire studio. We could also make six plants take up a small closet. Veg time has a lot to do with it. And, you know, just for you beginner growers out there, you're going to veg under 18 hours of light and 6 hours of dark until your plant reaches about 3 feet before your finishing height, you know, because after you flip the lights from 18 to 6 to 12 and 12, your plants are going to stretch about 3 to 4 more feet sometimes. So, you know, you need to take that into consideration, your ceiling height, your tent height, your room height, and, you know, it does grow very, very fast.
We're speaking with Devin Langford from Hawthorne Gardening Company. If people want to find out more about growing their own, what's the best way to get in touch with you and Hawthorne?
Well, you can follow Hawthorne on Instagram or Facebook, or check us out on hawthornegc.com. I also take gardening consultations and questions at Hydroponic Chef on all social media platforms. You know, I cook things, I grow things, and I know things, so give me a call, give me a message, and I'll help you get your gardening questions straightened out. And if you need a quote, we can get you taken care of. And if you need a tent, we've also got a package set up for you guys at 420 Radio Network. You can go to growershouse.com, and they've got the link up on your guys' site. You can use the promo code to get 10% off a beginning tent package or an expert package. So you get more you buy, the bigger savings. 420 Radio Network and Growers House.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Devin Langford of Hawthorne Gardening Company about the important parts of the decision of should you grow your own and what can you expect. Devin, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you all to the listeners on 420 Radio Network.
Thank you. And if you didn't hear all of Devin's suggestion, you can go to W420 Radio Network, go to the archive section, and hear this show and any other show from our library. We'll be right back.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
Welcome back to The Conversation. And join us today is Karen Muller, who is the owner of Cannabis Business Brokers. And this is the first time we've actually talked about buying or selling a business in the cannabis industry, in cannabis space. And so we're excited about having you with us, Karen, because this is something we don't know a lot about, and we have a lot of listeners who are thinking about getting into the business. So welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. I'm very, very excited to be on the show and look forward to sharing our thoughts and ideas with your listeners.
Super. So I recall in our last conversation, you were also a lawyer, but you don't really practice law. You're really in the business of brokering buyers and sellers of cannabis businesses. Did I get that correct?
Yes. Well, historically, I was a mergers and acquisitions attorney, so heavily focusing on purchases and sales of businesses with my clients in pharmaceuticals and other industries. So this was somewhat of a natural evolution and extraordinarily helpful because the cannabis businesses can be somewhat complex, and the transactions can present many challenges in terms of closing them, but they do get closed. But the legal background has really helped.
I would think so. We as I said, we've never had anybody on with your credentials and experience, so it's important because one of the constituents, Karen, that we're reaching out to is people who are contemplating getting into the cannabis business, whether it's greed or they like the product or whatever it is, but they don't know a lot about the business, and they are looking for us to help them understand some of the dynamics in the business. So what's going on from your standpoint? What's going on in the industry today that might make it attractive?
Well, I think there's a lot of shakeout going on in the industry because of the fact that pricing, which was quite high for the past couple years in terms of getting into the industry, has declined. Principally, that's because the larger public operators have experienced declines in their stock price due to some poorer than expected financial results, and their stock prices are down. They were using, many of them, equity as a portion, and in some cases as all of the purchase price. But having said that, I in general tell people who call me who want to get into this industry that don't come into this industry if you're looking to make a quick buck. It's not the right move because there is very strong competition coming from large multi-state operators, intrastate operators, and people with very deep pockets who have the same thought. They either really want to get into this industry because they find it attractive. I've seen many very wealthy people with children who the children want them to enter the industry. And so there's a lot of money that would compete with someone who, let's say, sold their liquor store and now they want to use those funds to get into this industry.
Mm-hmm.
I caution heavily against doing that. But having said that, if someone really would like to get in and learn the industry, then I recommend coming in with minimal money spent, perhaps purchasing a dispensary in an inexpensive transaction or a delivery service. It's a great way to learn about the industry. In California, I tell people who come to me, look, if you really want to get in and you're here for the long haul, then let's look at dispensaries that are more reasonably priced, such as those out in desert regions. You learn the industry and you can move forward from there. In addition, I think there are some public companies that could be very attractive in the long term. The stock prices are down now, and if someone did their research well, that is another good investment vehicle for cannabis.
Karen, I'm fascinated with your background because I'm thinking that your background of mergers and acquisitions, as you pointed out, would be beneficial to this particular business. But I would guess, having been in investments for 50 years, the interesting thing about this business, as I have talked to owners and developers, they come from all kinds of backgrounds. And many of them openly admitted to me, not on the air, but in a private conversation, they didn't have any idea what the heck they were doing when they went into the business. They know they liked the product. They thought there was an opportunity, but there was a tremendous amount of growth, personal growth, that had to go into the experience to try and figure out, one, if they liked it and could it survive. So given the work you did in mergers and acquisitions, it clearly sounds like you're saying there's a lot more risk in cannabis business. Are a lot of the people coming in, and I'm not trying to be overly critical of them, but ill-suited to come into this business?
No, the ones, people who are actually closing transactions, I can tell you without going into specifics on the transactions I'm involved with, because of course I'm under non-disclosure agreements, that the buyers tend to be people who are either familiar with the industry, have been in the industry, or are very closely tied to people who have who are experts. For instance, and I'm just going to deviate a little, cultivation, that's the most complex part of this industry. I know, but at first blush, someone might say, well, that's just agriculture. It's really not. It's a very complex plant to grow. And there are various environments. So in any event, I was deviating a little there, but the point I was trying to make is that I closed the transaction where somebody was purchasing an indoor cultivation facility. And the person who had the investors and the team, it was principally a financial person, but he was just tied to the hip with two very experienced cultivators who've been doing it for 10 years and could walk him through what was needed in the facility. And so that, honestly, is what I am seeing. I also, however, I think when you're just looking at the retail component of this business, there are people coming in who are willing to take on some risk, who have run other businesses, who will enter on the retail side of this business. But again, I almost hate to say this. I mean, many of the people who have had the most experience, of course, with dispensaries were in the black market, or as people like to call it now, the traditional market. And those are people who they really had the most experience, but are, for the most part, not inclined to want to be licensed because, in general, they don't have the ability or want to handle compliance and tax returns. So it's a very interesting shaking out. But just getting back to what your listeners are interested in, which is coming, really caring, notwithstanding everything you said, you know, I want to come into this industry. I like it. I see a long-term future. I see tremendous potential for medicinal uses of this plant beyond recreational. I think, again, we look at investing in companies that are listed, where you can look at the public information online, even for the Canadian companies, or coming in at this retail level, be it a delivery service or a dispensary, so you get your arms around the space. And from there, one could, if one would want to, you can become vertically integrated and perhaps start cultivating and use part of the cultivation for your dispensary or delivery needs.
So we're speaking with Karen Muller, who is the broker for the Cannabis Business Brokers. So are we done with this shakeout, or is there more to go?
Oh, no, I think there's more to go. You know, 2 weeks ago, the CEO of, I want to say it's 2 weeks, might have been 3 weeks, the CEO of MedMen resigned. The large companies, which people call them Canadian companies, really they're U.S.-based companies that are listed on the Canadian exchange. Mm-hmm. Many of these companies have taken on tremendous amount of debt, and they've taken on a lot of obligations in terms of leasing locations, payroll, and the question is whether with their model, given the debt they've taken on, whether they're going to be able to meet those obligations and have enough cash for their operations or to expand, or whether they've overexpanded or expanded too quickly. And so there could, if there's a shakeout, I think, which I believe there will continue to be, because I do see pricing continuing to drift down, then that could create some opportunities, because it's going to lower the pricing for the whole industry. And the lower the pricing goes, then gets to the point where you say, okay, yes, you sold your liquor store. You know, this is cheap enough to come in and put your money in and take a chance on this industry, which could grow in terms of consumer demand greatly in the future. So, but yes, I do think there's further shakeout coming.
So if I take you at your word, you seem to be leaning to the shakeout for the big multi-state operators like MedMen who perhaps have overextended. But if there is such a thing anymore, what about the mom and pop, the dispensary?
Mom and pop, well, let me touch on MedMen again and then come back to it. When I say shakeout, I just want to make it clear. I don't think these companies are going away. It's just that I don't think that they're going to continue to drive an upward trajectory of pricing. in the market, but they will be longer term competitors, right? So they will be there, but not perhaps as significant a competition to the mom and pops as perceived a year ago, but they'll still be there. As far as the mom and pops go, there's an enormous amount of money that has to go into marketing in this industry, because you do have competition, whether it be delivery or the dispensaries. And until the high tax rate issues are addressed, it's going to be very difficult for the mom and pops to compete. And I see it now. It's not that I'm seeing businesses that are very well run losing money. They're usually flat, or they make a little money. But the tax rates are very high, and I don't know if your viewers, well, your listeners probably are aware that when you file a federal tax return for a retail cannabis industry, you are not allowed to deduct your operating expenses. It's Section 280E. Mm-hmm. You can deduct the cost of goods sold. So you could theoretically have a business which is making money, but when you're not allowed to take those deductions, your federal income tax payment could put you in the red. So it's an enormously unfavorable tax provision, which everyone is hoping will go away over the next couple years. There have been talk about it in Congress, and I think that's the biggest threat to the mom and pop. And the other side of that is that, of course, with any tax provision, if you have a large company with the staff and tax accountants, there are ways to ameliorate that tremendous burden of not being able to deduct. But a small mom and pop with a small accountant, you know, or a smaller accounting firm, it's more challenging.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we've run out of time, but Karen, I want you, first of all, thank you for joining us today. I would like you to tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Oh, sure. They can email me at karen@cannabis-brokers.com. And it's spelled K-A-R-E-N at the word cannabis with the hyphen, brokers, plural, .com.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And if you missed part of this interview with Karen, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and you can pick up and listen to the rest of her interview and some of the other shows that we've done. So join us at W420RadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
Welcome to the conversation. Joining us today is our regular, Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association. We're going to be talking today about the move in the Senate to get the Senate, especially the Banking Committee chairman, to give recognition to the safe banking bill that was passed in the House last year to see whether we can get it into hearing or even mock-up. So, Morgan, can you give us an update?
Well, as we discussed previously, Senator Mike Crapo, who's the head of the Senate Banking Committee, has expressed some concerns about the bill as approved by the House, many of which are not really related to banking or the narrowly tailored issues that this legislation is meant to address. However, he has expressed a willingness to discuss the issue and hear from a broad variety of stakeholders and interested parties. So we've been working with his office to try to provide them with the best information possible from not only ourselves, but also industry leaders and employees in the cannabis industry. And hopefully we'll be able to continue the dialogue in a manner that is a little bit more conducive to actually getting this thing across the finish line in a way that maintains its real intent.
Thank you for that. If I might expand a little bit, if we were to be successful, if you were to be successful with your people in the industry and getting the Senate to take up the safe banking bill and have it focused on what the intent of the House was, if you have passage of this bill, would you anticipate, one, that the president would sign it? And number two, what does that do relative to potential deregulation of cannabis?
Well, first of all, I think that it's very likely that the president would sign that legislation, particularly since it supports commerce and small businesses and public safety. But we, you know, as of yet, we haven't had any confirmation of that, but that seems to be the general consensus. In terms of the benefits that it would have, it would immediately help with issues involving public safety, because these businesses would have a lot easier time finding banks to work with them. And it would allow for greater access to capital for small businesses and marginalized communities, because they'd have an easier time finding banks to loan them money so that they wouldn't be forced to try to tap angel investors and other outside sources that are frankly, pretty inaccessible to a lot of people. I think it's important to point out that cannabis isn't currently regulated at the federal level, and what we're trying to do is get it descheduled and then regulated by the appropriate federal agencies.
If I could play devil's advocate for a moment, even if you got a banking bill passed in the House, from the House to the Senate, and the Senate were to pass it, there's still one particular issue that is going to nag this industry for some period of time, actually several, but the most, to me, one of the most important ones is the risk nature of this business. One of the areas that I see as a big concern is that the cannabis business is classified as a very high risk business. And even if you got deregulation of the ability for cannabis companies to have banking accounts, there are regulations on the books in the banking industry that limits the amount of high-risk deposits that a bank can take. And so my concern is that because of the high-risk nature of the cannabis business, forget about regulation or deregulation, the high-risk nature of the business, I'm not totally convinced, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, that the outpouring of interest by bankers into this business is going to be that great. And the banking regulators can't change the risk profile nature of the business.
Well, the purpose of this legislation, in addition to helping with public safety, is to greatly reduce the risk profile for banks, particularly by providing a safe harbor for them under federal law to be able to work with these businesses. Clearly there's still going to be risk there, and I think it's doubtful that, you know, the biggest banks in the country and international banks are going to dive into the cannabis industry immediately upon passage, because they are very risk averse. But it will open up the opportunity for a lot of small and mid-level banks to who have already expressed their interest in working with the cannabis industry to be able to do so without fear of federal interference.
Yeah, I understand that. I was speaking in the last couple of days with a credit union in Colorado. They started in the banking business for credit unions, but they have a statutory limit of the amount of deposits as a percentage of the amount of deposits their institution can take in this high risk profile. They've hit their limit, and so they can't take any more money in that nature, because they had a statutory limit as to what percentage of their total assets could be brought in and in deposits from these businesses. So I understand the issue of the ability to want to, that the major money center banks, which were the ones who were dumping stuff in the last couple of years, getting rid of accounts. I think this, you may be right that the smaller to medium sized banks will want to play, but they're probably going to be limited to what they can take in terms of a percentage of the capital of the bank that they allowed to have in high risk deposits. So I'm a little concerned that the industry, the mom and pop in the industry, is let's say being misled that if we get this banking reform, everything will be hunky dory. And I'm not necessarily convinced that it will be.
Well, that's why we need as many banks as possible that are willing to participate in cannabis banking at all. If we have a small number of banks that are participating and they're running up against statutory limits on high-risk investments, we need to greatly increase the number of banks that are willing to even indulge in any portion of those risks as part of their portfolio. And that's why the House version actually contains oversight language that calls on banks that are doing business with the cannabis industry to report on the ways in which they are working with cannabis businesses, the types of businesses that they're funding, the types of representation among their cannabis portfolio.
Would you, with all the regulations that you've just talked about, and I'm assuming, Morgan, you correct me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming that if we get some kind of hearings or discussion about a Senate deciding, there's probably a good likelihood that the Senate will draft a bill that will be different than the House, and there's going to have to be a conference committee together to iron out the differences. So there's a lot of waggling that has to go on this legislation. Do you think that that's something that can happen this year?
I think it's possible. It's more likely than any other cannabis-related legislation actually passing both chambers and getting signed by the president. But this is why we have an in-house lobbying team that works 24/7 to actually engage in these discussions and try to convince lawmakers to do the right thing and pass the best bill possible. So we're very prepared for an uphill battle in the Senate and the possibility of conference committee.
Well, we're speaking with Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association on the 1,700 letters that went to the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee from people in the industry encourage him to bring the House bill up for consideration. If the election, if it doesn't come out this year, does the election outcome have either a plus or a minus impact on the probability of this happening, do you think, Morgan?
I think that it will almost invariably have a positive impact, because I think it's a very high likelihood that one of at least some of the dozens of states that are considering either legislation or ballot initiatives to pass sensible cannabis laws, whether those be medical or adult use, will succeed in November or possibly even before that. And that will directly translate into more support in Congress on behalf of lawmakers' constituents.
So I'm seeing a lot of discussion about the divergence from state to state, the regulations from state to state, and even operating the business and what authorities within the states. Would you think if we had an oversight industry at the or group at the federal level, would the states still have to be involved, or if it's a controlled substance legally? At the federal level, would the states defer to the feds?
Well, I mean, like with any other commodity that's regulated, you have both state and federal regulation. So we're definitely pushing for a regulatory structure at the federal level that can be used as a guidepost and establish at least a baseline of uniform protocols that can then inform state regulators and state policymakers.
Given the number of days that are there available to legislate in the Congress between now and the end of the year, is there enough days left, working days, to get this done?
We're cautiously optimistic that there are, yes.
Okay.
It seems as if, when summer rolls around, it's, everything is going to pretty much be focused on the election. But
sure.
I also think that Congress has a real need to show the American people that they can continue to legislate and do their jobs aside from politics. And this is an issue that has broad public support on both sides of the aisle. So it's an opportunity for them to show people that they can get things done.
So if we're talking about now, we're talking about banking reform. How far behind banking reform is cannabis reform?
It really depends, and it's difficult to put an exact number on it, but we've got more momentum than ever before. We're closer than ever before. The conversation has really switched from whether or not it should happen to exactly how it should happen, and there's going to be a lot of spirited debate about that, but hopefully we'll be able to accomplish broad reforms, including descheduling, at some point within the next 2 years.
My last question is, I talked to somebody recently about this whole issue. He was asking me the question, what is the risk in this business? Is the risk in this business is that the Congress and or a president, whoever he or she is from whatever party, that this thing gets tighter as opposed to looser? Is that any possibility?
I mean, it really depends on exactly how the federal regulatory structure shakes out. But cannabis is already, especially at the state level, one of the most heavily regulated substances around. So I don't think that it really can get too much tighter. I mean, of course, there's always that possibility. But, you know, honestly, I think that the current state of federal policy is far worse than any sort of regulatory structure, regardless of how strict.
Okay. We've been, and unfortunately, we're out of time. We've been talking to Morgan Fox, who is the communications director for the National Cannabis Industry Association, talking about possible legislation out of the Senate to allow better banking conditions for the cannabis industry. Morgan, how do people follow you?
We're available on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or you can go to thecannabisindustry.org.
Super. Thank you for joining us today. If you missed any of this discussion with Morgan, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and go to the archive section and download the rest of this show or any other show that you'd like to hear. Thank you for joining us today on America's Cannabis Conversation, and we'll be right back.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.
America's Cannabis Conversation.